You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 89. We got the weekend edition, Saturday, March 4th. We are now beyond a full week into spring training and got a great show ahead. We're going to be talking about TGFBI, critical draft. Steve, we're both in round 14, so we got a lot to go through in terms of the team build, what our takeaways were in the draft. We're also going to look into spring training and just talk through some early takeaways. Man, it has been a grind as of late, Steve. I know you had a nice vacation, but I know we've both been busy. And then the last two episodes, you know, the full student mode with PLV. And now we can kind of take the foot off the gas a little bit. Let's exhale. Let's talk about a draft. Let's get into some spring training stuff. I'm really looking forward to it. How's it going, man?
Good. I am fresh back from Florida myself. So kind of in my own spring training mode there. I did not catch a game. I was close to some games, watched some games, but I did not actually attend a spring training game. But hey, what are you going to do?
You had the baby.
Exactly. Yeah, I played some golf. So had my... I cashed in my own free time on vacation where I could, and that happened to be golf over spring training games. Although, with the pitch clock, and I'm sure we can get into it, it would have been a lot shorter of a trip, which is nice. So
maybe an anxious one. I threw out a this might upset most of our listeners, but I threw out a bold Instagram comment on like MLB Elites or something, and it came across my feed as posted like 1 minute ago, and it was complaining about the pitch clock. And I was like, well, I know that there's no comments on this post, so maybe I'll be one of the top comment guys. And I came in hot saying that, like, everybody needs to get over it. Like, it's good for the game. It's going to speed it up a little bit. Like, it's not that big of a deal. All the problems are happening now. And it did surge up as like the top comment, but I also had to fend off about 50 people coming for my head the rest of the weekend. Alyssa was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm getting attacked by Baseball Nation here about the pitch clock. So
just fighting off internet trolls, trying to keep my sanity. I like it. Yeah, I agree. I think it's... With any new rule or an adjustment like that, there's always going to be some growing pains, but that's kind of what spring training is for. Like, you know, people were freaking out over that automatic called strike that ended like the top of the ninth inning or whatever, right? Like that, but like, that's just not going to happen in any of those scenarios, just because they're going to be so adapted to it at that point and hyper focused on, you know, what they have to do, which is being in the box and everything like that. So that's just not going to happen.
They're getting used to it.
In a moment like that, yeah.
Well, if you want to attack me verbally, you guys can follow me on Twitter at @van_verified. You can follow Steve at @stav8818. And you guys can email the show. It's winsabovefantasy@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter @winsabovepod. But Steve, we got a nice little rundown here. So let's talk about it, man. I mean, we're into March. Both only completed like two or three drafts, but TGFBI is upon us. And, you know, this is a big one. It's kind of the bragging rights for the love of the game NFBC draft. And I know we've kind of talked offline, but give me the rundown on, your NFBC league, just how it's gone so far, big picture on TGFBI.
Yeah, this is kind of like... You know, it's become the industry kind of granddaddy of them all, right? Like, everyone plays in it. There's, what, I mean, over, like, 40 leagues now? Is that correct? It's around that. It's around that number, which is just absolutely insane. I mean, shout out to Justin Mason, who organizes all this, and all the guys at NFBC that basically put together, I got to think, which, you know, outside of, like, the main event, where, you know, it's the main event, and it has a really hefty buy-in, and all of the big money players playing it. Like, this has got to be one of their most, or one of the largest events that they run, right? It's just pretty cool being in a league, you know, seeing the names like, you know, Jeff Zimmerman is drafting one spot ahead of me, it's still like pretty crazy to see. Like, you know, it's like, oh, you're on deck. Well, wait till Zimmerman makes his pick. It's like, oh, you know, oh, only the guy I've been reading for the last 20 years for any fantasy advice is picking in front of me, which is it's pretty humbling to see and pretty cool. And I it's just awesome to compete against these guys. But format wise, I think it's good to hit on. Just as a reminder for anyone who's not familiar with TGFBI, it's the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. It's just like this industry league. It's a 15 team roto, 5x5 standard categories, you know, average, ERA, wins, whip, saves, standard 5x5, 15 team, and I believe it's 30 roster slots, right? So like 7 bench slots, no IL, 9 pitchers, and core infield, minimum infielder, 5 outfields, 1 util, 2 catchers. So that's like the roster rundown. And I don't know, just what you said to me kind of sums up my overall takeaways. It's like, this is just so hard. Like a 15 team league with all of these guys who know what they're doing, like you're going to walk away with a weakness one way or the other. I've tried to approach this year a little differently. We can get into that in a little bit, but you know, go for a more balanced approach, not necessarily fade pitching too much, you know, grab saves earlier, which is something I don't normally do, grab a catcher earlier, which is something I normally don't do. But because, and I think this is a big aspect, and I probably should hit on this earlier when describing the rules, it's a weekly league, right? You can change your hitters on Friday, but you can't change your pitchers. Fab runs once a week, so you can't be scrambling through the waiver wire. If, you know, one of your catchers goes down, you have to wait, and you know, you could potentially have a zero there for any position, really, for a week. It's just something that I need to, you know, growing up playing daily moves league my whole life, and being bad my first year in TGFBI in 2021 to okay in 2022. Maybe I'm going to be good in 2023. Hopefully that's the case at least. So I'm trying to adapt to this weekly format, which, you know, I'm more best balls if I do NFBC leagues or weekly or daily leagues if I do, you know, other pitcherless leagues or my standard home league. So trying to slowly adapt to that and become better at this format, which kind of is the format to play, right? Like this mimics the main event. Although in Adams on the Wire League, I did win that, but that was a 12 team league, which is totally different animal just because the depth here comes at you fast.
Yeah, it really does. I was crunching the numbers, and it's basically like, you know, simple math, but you think about 12-team leagues, usually, when you're doing your fantasy analysis, and you're like, oh, it seems like a third-round guy or a fourth-round guy, but really, it only takes 4 rounds of a 15-team league where you're basically, you know, an entire round later than what you would be in a 12-team league. So, you know, the guys who are, you know, in your brain, they're like a fifth round guy. You got to grab them in a fourth round in the 15 team draft. So you get a lot thinner, quicker on a lot of positions. And as you mentioned, Steve, on our back and forth, it's like, you got to take your medicine. Like you got to, if you don't grab a catcher, if you don't grab saves, then you're going to be missing out. And it's really tempting to pass up on that. But I think that was one of my biggest TGFBI lessons learned from last year, because I actually had some really good picks and plays, but I did not invest in closers, and I thought I could play the wire game, and it was brutal. Finished last place in saves, and that kept me in middle of the pack in the overall standings in my league standings. So, it's definitely a grind, and it's not an easy draft room. All the names that we say all off season that, you know, we've got our eye on and that we're targeting, those are the guys who get plucked a couple rounds before you were really hoping they would come back to you. So
we're targeting these guys because the guys we're drafting us against us are telling us to target these guys.
I was hoping it would be the other way around, Steve, but no, I think you're probably right on most of these. So it's no matter what, it's a lot of fun, though. It's a great way to kind of make connections. We've got the whole Twitter thread with like 10 of our league members in, and we're all kind of politely pinging each other when we're on the clock, all that good stuff. So yeah, without further ado, let's jump in and talk about the drafts itself, Steve, because we're about halfway through, which is most of the, you know, the heavy hitters for your team. Of course, we still got some deep sleepers ahead. We can't give any spoiler alerts out. Nice try, Estevao, just tuning into this podcast right now, probably trying to get a leg up on me. But the question is, how did you start your build, Steve? Tell us what draft slot you were in and maybe your first two picks and kind of why you went that way.
So I was team 9. I think that was pretty high in my KDS, if I remember correctly. I could probably pick that up, pull it up as we talk. But, you know, I had sort of that we talked about this a bunch, right, on shows where we wanted to set our KDS. And I always targeted those middle picks. So I got 9th, which I think was 2nd, if I remember correctly, on my KDS order. So was pretty happy with that. And the idea, just quickly to hit on it, yep, it was 2nd. 8 was 1st, 9 was 2nd, and then I went 10, 7, 6, 5. So I wanted, you know, a middle pick, and the idea behind that is you get a high-end talent in the middle of the first round, and then on the way back, before there's like a talent drop-off towards the end of round 2, you're still picking, you know, from a nice pool of players. So I went 9th. A guy that I think we talked about like the first off-season show, like that we'd be happy with grabbing him in the mid to late first rounds. I went with Juan Soto, right? Like I got him with the 9th pick, where last year you needed the top 4 pick essentially to get him, pretty much. I know it didn't work out too well. Just, you know, for him it was a down year. But I'm all in on the Soto bounce back. I think, you know, there was a back injury that I think has gone kind of underreported. I don't think anyone's really mentioned that. Like, he had that back injury when he was traded to San Diego a few days in, where he like took batting practice, tried to swing, and was out for a few days. And
it's a good point. You forget about that.
Yeah, kind of with his rolling charts, you saw some power fall off there, even though, you know, he did kind of have a little bit of a bounce back in San Diego, at least like in the average wise towards the end of the season. So that's something that I think definitely bothered him. And then just the scenarios that were going around him, right? Like there was the way the Nationals treated him, like with, you know, releasing these public offers that he was turning down that he wasn't happy with, you know, being on that horrible team, which, you know, couldn't have been fun to play for, sort of knowing that they were just okay with letting him walk and then just waiting for a trade to happen. And then when a trade does happen, you know, we talk about this a bunch, like with Nick Castellanos, with, you know, guys that have this pressure on the when they go to a new team. I know we normally talk about it with a new deal, like with Marcus Semien. You saw like his PLV charts where, you know, his eye essentially and reach rate was just out of control when he first went to Texas, and he was clearly pressing. And then that kind of leveled off as he became adapted to his new environment. So that's definitely a thing. So I like the Soto bounce back, and that's kind of why I'm happy picking in this area in the first round. And then for my second pick, with how horrible I think first and third are, fall off wise, third more than the first, I went with Paul Goldschmidt. And then, I guess, not that you asked me this, but my third round pick was Nolan Arenado. So I got the corners covered along with Juan Soto in the first 3 rounds.
The Cardinal corners, I love it, man. They went.
Yeah,
back,
I did
back,
that for. I did that for you. Dogs. I know you're gonna. You know, you can't say anything about the start of my draft just because it has Goldschmidt Arenado as a Cardinal fan, right?
No, it's good. Yeah, I mean, I love Soto for a bounce back as well. I think one thing that's a little interesting is in the 5x5 format, some of that brilliant average Soto, that the walk rates don't, you know, they pull some ABs away, but, you know, theoretically he's also getting on base. Maybe he's getting the, you know, handful of more steals this year with the rule changes and everything. So.
And is he a free agent after this year? Or does he have one more? But, you know, after a bounce back year, I think, you know, we saw what happened with, or a down year. I think we saw what happened with Judge. Like, there could be the, like, okay, I'm going to go nuclear and just boost my stats for absolutely everything. Like, Soto has stolen a handful of bases throughout his career. I think he had like 9 even last year.
Six last year, nine the year before.
So he's not a zero in the category. He has had 12 in 2019. So, I mean,
you know, and those are the guys. I mean, I still have a hard time wrapping my head around it, but people are saying that, you know, the guys from like 5 to 15 steals are going to be the biggest beneficiaries because theoretically they get the green light when they didn't. You know, I still can't imagine a guy who steals 30 bases and gets caught 7 times isn't going to steal 35 bases, but I guess that's what the data is suggesting. So yeah, I think Soto is right in line. And then another thing we haven't talked about is outfielder is almost as important as in a 5 outfield league, which is TGFBI. Getting an outfielder in the first round is actually a positive. So that's another big thing, is that you kind of addressed a position there. So that's clutch. On my side, I went away a little bit. I mean, my KDS was middle of the pack. I think it was like 6 or 7 on my preference, but it was actually in the 3 slot. And my preference was kind of that same range, like the 8 to 12. But I did end up putting 3 in that zone because for a couple of reasons. First, I really like the idea of shoring up second base early with Altuve is kind of who I had circled. And then you also get kind of your first pick of the SPs if you want them there. The other thing I kind of like is you also are leading that range of basically the pitchers at like the early round 5 as well, as something that I liked in that zone. So I started out with Jose Ramirez, which was immediately addressing third base. He's about as steady and safe as you want with the 29 and 20 last year, 280, great counting stats, kind of under the radar that he had 126 RBIs last year. But yeah, this is now basically, what, two years in a row where he's averaged like 30 homers, 23 steals. You know the average is going to be a plus. You know the counting stats are going to be great, and it's at third base. So that was, you know, the one that I wanted, and he fell to me before him was Julio Rodriguez went 1 in my league, and then Ronald Acuna Jr. So then on the second turn, I actually was faced with a choice between Simeon.
To interrupt there, Van, why did you go – other than the third base, why'd you go J-Ram over Trey Turner?
I mean, position was a really big one, but I also think...
Yeah, I guess. I can't tell you to exclude your answer, yeah.
Yeah, and I think the pop is more bankable with Ramirez. You know, I think Turner might be more of like a 25-homer guy when Ramirez is a 30-homer guy. But overall, I just feel like there's a little bit more stability with Ramirez in a 5x5 roto. Turner's had a little bit more issues staying on the field.
A new contract, right? I mean, we just talked about that a little bit.
Could be pressing. But I mean, even going back to you have to go all the way back to 2016 where Jose Ramirez didn't return like top 20 value. And that's what I really like, is that at that position, I feel like it's really can't miss. It's a safe pick for sure, but I never was not going to pick Ramirez. Like, that's what I was messaging some pitcherless guys, and they're asking, you know, who you got your eye on at 3, and it was like, I really hope Ramirez falls to me. So I was happy with that. A little bit of a vanilla pick, but definitely excited to have third base addressed. Then in the second round, I had the irony that half of my reason was I really liked Altuve. I've been talking about him all offseason. And I ended up going Marcus Semien, and right after me, Pete Ball of Pitcherless goes with Jose Altuve. So it was a tough call, Steve, but I think, you know, part of that was I felt like I could make up average a little bit later, and the counting stats, Semien's just RBI and runs, and there's so much volume there that I was willing to kind of give up the 20 points on average. But most importantly, kind of the theme for my draft was addressing infield. So you mentioned Arenado at the third round for you. I got Matt Olson in the third round. So right away I had second base, third base, second base, and first base covered, and felt really good about that with three bats out of the gate. But we haven't talked that much about Semien. Were you surprised that that was pick number two for me?
Yeah, I would have thought you went Altuve, but I get it. I think that, you know, they're pretty much interchangeable. I understand with basically how amazing Semien was in from June or June on, basically, wanting to go with him over Altuve. I know that, you know, there's been some kind of down years, and now it's not as much steals and more home runs for Altuve. In 5x5, I can understand wanting to, hey, you know, bank on the you know, probably 10 more steals for Semien. Yeah. However, you know, since you went Ramirez, which, you know, kind of has what, like a 280 average ceiling. I think that might be Simeon's average ceiling as well.
They're very similar guys.
Maybe
for sure.
Maybe Altuve has a little bit higher of an average ceiling. Although, you know, he's no longer that 330 hitter anymore, right? Like, it's probably more of a closer to J-Ram and Semien than you think. I you know, Simeon's first 2 months just absolutely cratered his average. So it's kind of an outlier to look at his, what, overall, like, what, 250 from last year. I think he's due for a bump in that, and it's not fair to consider him that low of an average hitter just with how bad his start was last year. So I don't think I would say, oh, hey, you definitely should have done this because you took J-Ram in the first round. I kind of consider it a toss-up. I like both those players, so Don't blame me there. And then I like Olson as a bounce back a lot this year. I think he's going to benefit greatly from the shift
I think Olson, you know, even having like the auction calculators up, there's a pretty major drop off, and ADP reflects that as well. It's about 40 picks before you get to like Abreu and Vinny P. But yeah, just some of those projections have his average coming up from 240 to like 255, 37 homers. Obviously, the Braves lineup, he's going to get you runs and RBIs as well. So just wanted to almost reach a little bit on Olson there, and felt good about it going hitter, hitter, hitter. And I know you did the same. Mm-hmm. So talk about the next couple rounds, Steve, and you know, how you began to approach pitching.
There, I kind of wanted to like shore up some holes, like in the middle rounds. It was like, okay, like round four, I'm ready to take a pitcher. I know that's still kind of late for, you know, most teams had pitchers. I think I was I was the last team to take a pitcher, which I always am. But still, hey, round four is early for me. I got Max Scherzer, a guy I normally never get, a guy that's, you know, I know he's a bit older now, and you might not expect 200 innings from him, but I think I'm going to expect more than like the 150 he had last year, just because it's Max Scherzer. So as oatmeal-y of an ace that I think you can get.
Loves the pitch clock. He's excited
exactly,
about the pitch
exactly,
clock.
Exactly. So with these rounds, I kind of want to shore up my holes, which I thought was pitchers, a middle infielder, and another outfielder, just because it's outfield is so deep with with the five outfield slots. I kind of wanted to get two what I think could be studs to pair with another one to pair with Soto. So I went Scherzer, Javier, Eloy in the sixth, Willy Adames in the seventh, and then got my first closer in the eighth in Daniel Bard. So I wanted to fill those holes. I like Willy Adames a lot. Eloy, you know, I know he's, you know, I another guy that I don't need to pitch to you. We know how good he can be when he can stay on the field. And I think now that, you know, maybe he'll get more time at DH, that should be able to keep him on the field. And it has been kind of freak injuries, you know, that one in 2021 where he, you know, was trying to rob a home run spring training. My God, please don't ever do that in spring training. And then last year was like, you know, I think it was like hamstring injuries last year, I think for Eloy, there, which, you know, it isn't, you don't love to see that, but it's not like, you know, like all these soft tissues, muscle ligaments, and like the, like, you know, like where to the point where like Giancarlo Stanton was like, you know, battling like a calf injury every year or whatever. I think they're kind of isolated, you know, also not a doctor, so maybe not. I have no idea, but I think that Eloy can stay healthy. Like, I think he'd easily shake off the last 2 years and play, you know, close to a full season. And then kind of working backwards, Javier and Scherzer, just to pair those two, like, you know, I think I got a high, extremely high floor ace in Max Scherzer. And then, like, as, you know, another guy that we talked about a bunch in Javier, like, the ceiling, the quote, you know, Michael Jordan, the ceiling is the roof, you know. Like, he could be a top five pitcher in my mind with that fastball and just how good he is. If there's anything else that develops with that fastball and slider combination that he has, like, look out. He could be, you know, a top two round pitcher next year with how good that fastball is and how amazing he was in not a full starter sample. So, and then, yeah, I wanted to take my medicine. Like, I guess this is more of like a big picture takeaway. Like, I don't feel good doing that. Like, no. Yes, I have saves, but I have Daniel Bard in the eighth round. Maybe I'm doing this wrong. Maybe I need to go earlier on closers, but like, yeah, Bard was awesome last year. I had him in a ton of places, but it's still like, yeah, I can't get excited about Daniel Bard, but I guess I have to, because in theory, I locked up 30 saves because it's Colorado. They like having one closer. You know, Bard's skills were great last year. His results were great. So, yeah, Daniel Bard.
Yeah, nobody. You shouldn't enjoy taking your medicine. If you do, that is a problem. But yeah, it's part of the gig, and it's like on a slow draft as well. You're waiting so long for your pick, and then you're like, man, am I really doing something out of obligation? But you know, it's the mature play to do. And I think that was one of the things we learned from last year is closers and catchers. We didn't want to be last on the bus. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about a lot of names as well coming up to continue on here and get into spring training as well. But first, we're going to take our first ad break and we'll be right back. Yeah, but Steve, I'm totally with you. I mean, you know, I did the same thing where I ended up grabbing Clay Holmes in the ninth, I believe.
Oh, nice. He went in the seventh in mine. Yeah.
Yeah. So he hung around a little bit. And it's a bit different when you're picking at three because you were at nine. So you at least have a chance to kind of assess pick by pick. For me, closer to the turn, it was very much like I'm going in with an assignment.
You kind of have to have two picks ready. It's like, all right, one, I need to, you know, eat my vegetables. Then, like, yep. I can have my ice cream after dinner if I do that.
Exactly. And that's what I did. So after Ramirez, Simeon, Olsen, I pretty much saw that, you know, outfield was looking thin early, and a couple of the guys on the turn after me needed outfield as well. On the other hand, there were a handful of SP1s, basically, and I really wanted Gausman or Zach Wheeler. So I ended up grabbing Eloy Jimenez, which was a bit of a reach at the end of the fourth round. But I wanted to make sure that I felt really good about my OF1. So I grabbed him and then Pete Ball sniped me with Gausman one pick before me because I really did want Gausman with, you know, I still am excited about Zach Wheeler, and that's who I ended up getting as my SP1 there. But yeah, there's definitely playing a little bit of strategy when you're near the turn and you're kind of looking at, you know, when there's five picks in between you or four picks in between you, you know, what are those teams' needs and what can I do to basically eliminate the chance of me being in a really tough spot. So that was my kind of swing there. And then I kind of went back in, as we've talked about all offseason, as that being kind of the pitcher honeypot. So after not grabbing a pitcher in the first four rounds, I went Wheeler, then Tristan McKenzie and George Kirby after that. So I got a little bit of, you know, the upside with Tristan McKenzie, and then kind of the surprisingly high floor for George Kirby with some upside as well. I think there's some breakout stuff. I know Dave Mendelson has been on the pod, a great Twitter follow, but Mendy had thrown out a tweet about some of the pitches that Kirby's working on and potentially a Bieber-like ascent this year. So I don't think he's void of any upside, but just with the elite command, you know that you're going to get some good ratios from Kirby and hopefully some volume with the Mariners. So it's my first share of Kirby ever. So I'm excited about that as a SP3. And then I routed out the infield with Nico Horner next as my shortstop, who you also grabbed mm-hmm. as your second baseman. So we got between Eloy and Nico Horner, we got a little overlap here, Steve.
Yeah, and then I have your Cardinals too. So you're going to be rooting for my team all year long. I love it.
Yeah, it's great. But I mean, Horner, there's a lot to be excited about. I know I was peppering you on the text as well about Horner, but he fits the mold, man. 20 steals, 10 home runs last season. The news just came out today as we record this that he's set to bat leadoff from the club. He's eligible at short, which is where I got him, but super savvy on your part to grab him as your second baseman, which he should get in, I think, what, 10 games?
I'm looking that up right now. It's either 10 or 5.
And while you're looking up, his 10 homers, 20 steals last year was in 135 games. So if he's an everyday guy, bigger bases, he doesn't walk all that much. So the plus average that he brings, he's like a true 280 hitter, maybe 290. You're going to get every bit of that because he's not walking that much. So
yeah, it's 10 games. So at 10 games, 2 weeks I'll have an actual second baseman. Although I did just draft another second baseman to hold me over there, but we can get to that. So, okay. Yeah, with Adames and Horner, I have two shortstops. So that first sort of 2 weeks, I guess, or, you know, it actually will be just like, I think like the first week essentially, because the game start on like Wednesday or Thursday, right? So hopefully yeah. He'll have second base really, really close and into the second week of by the second week of April, the latest. So that was
so
my
at
plan
this
there,
point,
yeah.
You're pretty much you know, around like ADP 130, 140. What'd you do with your next pick, Steve?
It was more medicine after Daniel Bard. Like, the things I needed on my team were speed, saves, and a catcher. Just because, you know, out of Soto, Goldschmidt, Arenado, I know that like Soto and Goldschmidt are good for, you know, on the low end 5 each. So that's 10 there. But, you know, through the first 7 rounds, only having 10 steals, because I'm considering Arenado, Jimenez, and Adames basically close to zeros. You know, I needed some guys that stole bases. So from rounds 9 to 13, where I am now, I went Tyler Stevenson. So that's a catcher. Nico Horner. Jesus Luzardo. So sprinkled in another starter that I think with high upside there. I kind of didn't see anyone that I loved at any position that I needed. Like, I didn't want to go Javier Baez. I was considering Jonathan India, who went a little bit later, but figured that with Horner, I kind of had a second baseman. I didn't want to go like I wanted to count Horner as my starting second baseman, right? Like, even though he doesn't have it right now, it's sometimes hard to do. So after Luzardo in the 11th, I went Jose Leclerc, who is currently injured minorly, but I think he's missing the World Baseball Classic. It came out today, but he still should be the closer in Texas. Again, that's just so – it's like, oh, did I just spend the 12-round pick on some guy who doesn't even have a job where I could have went like, you know, I don't know, someone like Jeffrey Springs or something like that. That's like an actual legit starter. I don't know, whatever. I needed a closer. I needed saves. I'm not coming last in saves. I'm investing draft capital in it. And then I went Josh Rojas as that fill-in second baseman who also has third baseman eligibility. So he could be my second baseman. He could be my MI. He could be my CI. And should have some more steals out there in Arizona. I know he's not like the best real-life player, but he's a decent fantasy player. And hopefully between Horner and Rojas, like conservatively, I could say that's 30 steals, hopefully, on the low end. You know, if they each got 15, I think the projections probably have them closer to 20 each. But being safe there, I should have a, somewhat of a foundation for steals now.
Yeah, Rojas with 23 swipes last year in 125 games. So I think it checks out. Yeah, and it's that's what, in a, especially in a draft like this, in a 15-teamer playing Roto, I think after you get past, you know, pick 100, you're pretty much looking at, you know, what your team does not have and trying to, like, fill in the gaps. So I pretty much did the same thing, you know, to this point in the draft. I had not had a closer after Nico Horner, so I grabbed Clay Holmes. And then I needed a second outfielder because it's five outfielder league. I was between Renfro and Happ, but I felt like I had speed pretty covered with Ramirez, Simeon, and Horner. So I ended up going Hunter Renfro over Happ. Pretty similar players. And honestly, I kind of like both of them. Happ's going to hit a little bit higher in the order, but not as good of a lineup. Renfro's slated to hit fifth. You know, he's not going to give you speed, but he should fall somewhere around 245 with 30 homers and some pretty good counting stats. So yeah, pretty boring. But then I did get Jeffrey Springs after that. So that was my Nick Pollock four for floor there with Wheeler, McKenzie, Kirby, and Springs. And I think Springs, especially when we talked about the PLV and just how high he kind of reads on that, paired with the fact that, you know, he's a raised pitcher and, you know, he's got good stuff. I know that some people have talked about how, you know, is there another step forward for him in terms of stuff, or has he kind of, you know, maximized his talent and maybe the step forward is increasing volume a little bit. But I do like Springs quite a bit as an SP4. So now I'm kind of done with starters for a while. I got to get a second closer. I got to continue to kind of build out the outfield and then hopefully some fun picks, but they go quick, man. Miguel Vargas just went middle of the 14th in my league, and I was really hoping, as you know, to have 100% Vargas shares, especially, unfortunately, with the Gavin Lux news that he's going to be out this whole season. I think that just cements that Vargas, you know, as long as he doesn't completely collapse, probably a safe bet to go 140-plus games, which is very exciting. And I think Dave Roberts was also talking about really giving Vargas the green light on the base paths to try to get some more steals as well. So there is a path for Vargas to be, you know, 270, 25, and 10, 10 to 15 even. You know, the power, he'll have to show that it wasn't a fluke in the minors because it didn't look great last year, but anyway, yeah, Vargas was one that I was really hoping for. Has he gone in your league yet?
No, he has not, but I'm about to enter the 14th round and I may have to do it.
Yeah. I mean, that could be your second base support too, you know?
Yeah.
If you need it.
Absolutely.
So Steve, you mentioned the takeaways. Looking at kind of the draft board overall, can you pull out any kind of observations that you thought were kind of specific to your draft, any trends or anything that kind of smacked you in the face and before you knew it, you were like, man, I did not expect this to happen?
No, but, you know, I know that there's like a meme and a joke, and I saw like, I think it was, Ryan Bloomfield just put out a joke, like a TGFBI thread, just instead of the gif of a person hitting a home run or getting a strikeout, it's the person giving up a bomb or like getting injured. So like kind of like razzing your own team. Like there's a joke that, you know, everyone feels good about their draft as they're in it and leave it. Like, I don't know how I feel about mine, and maybe that's because it's, you know, more of me sticking to lessons learned and taking things and sticking to, you know, needs and not going for as much upside as I normally do. But I don't know. I just don't, like, I don't love my team. Like, I don't feel like I have five category guys and at the top. Like, you know, I have positions filled, but, you know, I still only have three starters despite investing in the fourth and fifth round and two starters. You know, I kind of don't know if I'm doing it right, I guess, is kind of my overall feeling, right? Like Daniel Bard and Jose Leclerc, yeah, hey, like, nice. I invested in saves. Are Daniel Bard and Jose Leclerc any good? Like, I don't know. Like, do you want the closers on Colorado and Texas?
I think part of that investment, you know, is securing that you're not going to be like bottom four in the category. Because if you do look around the rest of your team, the rest of the teams in your league, you know, a lot of people are skipping, you know, those rounds in terms of closers. Like, you know, that's where I like looking at the draft board and just seeing, you know, where do I fall against other teams in terms of closers or in terms of catchers. And as long as you're not the absolute last one on the bus, then you're probably going to be in a decent spot.
Yeah. Like, I think Tyler Stevenson's good. I think I have a good first catcher. I still got to get a second one. Like, you know, I don't know. Like, mm-hmm. it just feels uncomfortable, maybe because it's just how sharp and deep of a room it is. Maybe it's supposed to feel uncomfortable when you're not going for like the sexy pick at every turn. I feel uncomfortable. That's my takeaway. I hope that I'm doing it right, essentially.
Well, we're going to find out, and we're going to be talking about it all season. I think what jumped, at least in my draft, what jumped out the most was outfield tax. I mean, like guys like Brian Reynolds went pick 80. Tyler O'Neill went pick 83. Stephen Kwan went like just two rounds after that. Like almost every outfielder was going ahead of their ADP. Taylor Ward went 98th. So it was very aggressive on outfield, which was unfortunate for me with my OF1 being Eloy and waiting all the way to Hunter Renfroe. But that was the one that kind of bit me a little bit. But beyond that, I mean, it's kind of par for the course on what we've been looking at for ADP. The guys who I think we expected to be, you know, draft room favorites, Taylor Ward is one of them. Rowdy Tellez went way before his ADP. Lars Nootbaar, certainly. Vaughn Grissom went extremely early, went in the 11th round. And he's still kind of battling with Orlando Arcia for position battle. So yeah, very, very interesting. Any final guys? I think there's probably one or two that we didn't mention, unless you got through them all from your side.
Yeah, I really wanted Nootbaar. He went in the 12th. I was probably going to take him there. I ended up taking Leclerc in the 12th. He went to Welsh at the start of round 12. So I think that's maybe a round before where his actual ADP was. It's probably what, like the 175th, and he's probably around 180 ADP, 185.
So not too early.
Yeah, not too early.
Best format.
Yeah, exactly. But I love me some Lars Nootbaar, so I was kind of upset there. Ezekiel Tovar went already in the 12th with the Brendan Rodgers news, I guess, came out today that, you know, he has the bad shoulder and potentially could miss the season. And Tovar has been good this spring and is exciting. And, you know, we've talked about how hype everyone can get about a position player coming up in Colorado. So round 12, I was not expecting to see that just a few weeks ago with Tovar. He seemed like more of like an end game flyer. But hey, with the spring he's having already and the news for Rodgers, why not?
Yeah, and what's kind of weird is that Rodgers was at second, so I feel like Tovar at short should have been there anyway. I'm wondering what his what Tovar's ADP is. It looks like 250. So if he just went, I guess that's it's getting to that range. But
yeah,
that's
before it's pick 200, definitely. Yeah,
yeah.
Wow. And I think that who's penciled in as their shortstop, I don't know, for us to resource, already updated and has Tovar filling in for Rodgers, but. Yeah, I mean, Roster Resource already had him at shortstop, so
yeah.
Did
Masataka Yoshida go early?
He just went as well. He went in the fifth pick in round 13.
Yeah, Pete Ball went Yoshida in the 11th round, so oh, really wow. Banking on
yeah. The outfield tax does not exist as strongly in my league. Brian Reynolds went in like the sixth. I was considering Yelich. I really do, you know, looking at Yelich's overall numbers, and I think if we adjust the expectations for him not to be this MVP player, I think he's just a solid fantasy player. He went in round 8. I was upset when he went, and am kicking myself for having to take Daniel Bard and take my medicine and pass on a guy like Yelich who could be like a mini 5 category guy.
Well, in the spirit of the lessons learned, just to rifle through what I was saying from last year, I wanted to be out on starting pitchers at the very top of the draft. Check that box. Trust youth at the right cost, I think, to some extent with Tristan McKenzie, Kirby. Draft talent over innings projections, potentially the Jeffrey Springs. Don't be prisoner to ADP. I mean, more or less with some reaches here and there for like an Eloy. I feel happy that I've at least grabbed my guys in certain areas, so I'm good with that. But Steve, on your, I guess, overall, your philosophy, like how are you feeling with your approach and how you tackled it?
Yeah, I wanted to take less risks early, which I think I did. You know, Soto, Goldschmidt, Arenado, like. Those are guys that just have been metronomes for years, even with Scherzer too, right? As my first pitcher, didn't want to have, you know, like, this is a bad example, but, you know, taking Shane McClanahan as your first pitcher in round 9 in TGFBI, even if that's a correct pick, probably isn't a good idea because you probably need two pitchers at that point already, even if you do hit on the 1 and 9th. So talked about that a bunch the offseason, and then kind of wanted to take my medicine, which I've done. I have two closers. I have a catcher all before round 13, which is not something that I normally do. I kind of missed that SP sweet spot. I did dip my toe and get Lizardo. So maybe I'll have to dig and find
there's some names out there.
Some starters here. One thing that I do find not annoying, but hard to do, and when you're in the middle of the draft, it's hard to like team build, or I like building my team 2 picks at a time, essentially, right? Yeah. Like from picks 1 to 3 or 13 to 15, like you're kind of like, okay, I want him and him. Like when you're in ninth, like you make the pick and then it's like, the board's totally different. Like you have to do one pick at a time. I think I've just kind of been on the ends in a lot of drafts. And even though talent wise, I wanted that for the first 2 rounds, it's only the first 2 rounds, right? Like it doesn't matter after that. Maybe just from a comfortability standpoint, for some next, KDS style drafts. I'll choose the ends. I like building my team 2 picks at a time. That's kind of what I've learned from this experience picking ninth.
Well, that's great. And that kind of wraps up our midway point TGFBI recap. So hopefully, listeners, you guys enjoyed us kind of kicking back, talking the draft board and some approach, some player targets, all that good stuff. But we are going to shift into spring training, some takeaways, some early thoughts on how to assess everything, and some standout players. But first, we are going to take our second ad break, and we'll be right back. All right, so Steve, full pivot here to spring training, because that's the other fun part about March kicking off. We're 1 week in, World Baseball Classic starting next week. It's going to be like a whole second type of spring training. But every year it comes with kind of the boilerplate disclaimers that you really can't put that much stock into the surface stats of spring training. And we've seen that in the past, whether it was Keston Hura last year. We've laughed about Michael Franco in the past, hitting like 8 home runs and everyone, you know, reaching up, grabbing him in the 5th round. It doesn't always work out like that. In fact, it rarely does. So, talk to me about, you know, spring training, just the Steve Gisuelli process. Are you all over Twitter? Are you just watching for who's hitting bombs and then you do some further research? Like, how do you kind of remove some of the noise and what do you kind of pay attention to when it comes to spring training?
Velocity for starting pitchers. And it's honestly probably even still a little early for that, right? Like, it's most starters only have 1-2 starts max. And, you know, I think I saw some tweets like, oh my God, look how down this guy's velocity is. Like, the first start in spring training, I really don't care. Unless it's right. Like a big jump up, I'm going to assume guys are just building up and getting velocity there. For hitters, you know, maybe, you know, something that caught my eye that I remembered last year that stuck with it was, you know, Miguel Vargas hitting an absolute bomb off Shane Bieber. That just like was like, whoa, like, hey, this guy looks like he could be a really good hitter, and then had that year that he did in AAA. So yeah, it for me at this point, it's still like fading the noise. I think it's a lot, it's so a lot, early a lot, a lot well. Of noise. Yeah. It's so early, and the large sample of spring training we know is not meaningless, but you should take it with a gigantic grain of salt. So an early sample in spring training, like, it's like a caveat within a caveat. So not to poo-poo this whole section that we're about.
No, I think that's the point.
You got to kind of just like fade the noise, essentially, is my.
Yeah, I think in large part, spring training can be fool's gold. And, you know, we all kind of fall victim to it because we're just, you know, dying for any type of fantasy content and production. Yes. And when you're watching MLB TV, like FastCast, and you see all these home runs, you want to wish cast when you see that, like, Kelnick has, you know, 3 bombs or whatever it is. And, you know, then you kind of take a deeper look and you look at the strikeout rate and everything. So that's part of what we're talking about here. I mean, we'll have near the end of spring training, I'm sure we'll have kind of the full takeaway show. But this one is more like kicking off spring training, and wanted to start by, yeah, just, you mentioned, velo, some of those considerations, just also for the listeners, I think, to throw out some pitcher list plugs, great article out there from both Scott Chu on hitters and also Nick Pollock on pitchers. For every single team, they profile a handful of guys and what to watch for in spring training. So that's a great resource. They've done the hard work for you. Go out, check out the article. And, you know, if you're interested in a Vaughn Grissom, Scott's telling you exactly what to watch out for, that he's, you know, potentially might lose at bats to Orlando Arcia. You got to look at both of their stats, things of that nature. Mike Kerlin had a really good article on Fantasy Pros as well. That was just 5 things to watch for. He mentioned, the velo, like you said. The other thing is position battles are really important. I think we'll talk through some of those, both for hitters and for pitchers who are trying to fight for a rotation spot. The other thing that's gold for any PL Pro members or anybody who uses Pitcher List a lot and is kind of thinking about being a, you know, subscribing to be a PL Pro member, the Plus Pitch podcast from Nick Pollock is just terrific because it recaps every pitcher from that day. And it's pretty much the SP roundup of what Nick saw, what, you know, I mean, obviously Nick is not paying attention to the wrong stuff. He's not falling victim to the noise. He's instead looking to see if they've, you know, developed their curveball or if they're, you know, adding meaningful velocity. And that's the type of stuff. They're like 15 minute episodes. That's priceless for, you know, March drafts. So I would really recommend that. But to jump in on some position battles, Steve, you know, a few that kind of jumped out, Vaughn Grissom and Arcia. Jake Fraley is a name we haven't really talked about much, but I know he's kind of got like a cult following for the Reds in that ballpark. And, you know, he had some buzz with the Mariners as a prospect. He offers a little bit of that like 2020 if you're squinting or wish casting. And, you know, for him to basically secure an everyday job in Cincinnati could be kind of interesting, especially for deeper leagues. So that one is big. And then me, selfishly, for the Cardinals, I think there's about five guys who are fighting for like two or three positions. And it might be a headache carousel, but Brendan Donovan, Dylan Carlson, Jordan Walker, who is definitely one to watch in the spring. Juan Yepes, and then Nolan Gorman, who's kind of had a swing change approach, had holes in his swing last year. He's worked on it all offseason. Now he's kind of spraying the ball a little bit better on like high fastballs. So the Cardinals are all super interesting to watch, even kind of personal bias aside. I think there's some of the better offensive battles happening with the Cardinals. But what else are you watching for? I mean, I know like Volpe, the Yankees got some interesting stuff going on with, you know, if Volpe could, which I think is kind of a long shot, but could break camp would be huge. It's interesting to watch these battles, but I don't know if any of those ones are kind of standing out to you that you're looking at or other ones for that matter.
No, it's a great point. That's another thing that I should have brought up. Like that is definitely probably the biggest thing, like for hitters at least, like who's playing when. Like, is this guy playing in the beginning of the games when the other starters are coming out? Are they playing in the end of games? Like, you know, how are they approaching position battles? Are they giving guys like games at a time? Like, it's just something that you need to focus on. Like, you could see, hey, this guy like won a job. Like, that could lead to, you know, a even just putting him on your waiver wire watch list or something like that. Hey, this guy like beat out other major league players. Like maybe there's something going on here. As far as the examples, not to make this like a Cardinals podcast, but that's the most interesting to me because I just think the Cardinals still need to make a trade from those guys. I think that maybe the answer is trading like a Carlson or something to make room for Walker somehow. It's just definitely something that's just, I think, is extremely interesting and something I'm going to keep my eye on as well. And, you know, text you about for the Cardinals fans.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I mean, honestly, from this list of names, something that's really caught my eye, I know it's super early, but Brendan Donovan, who's, you know, second base eligible, just 26 years old, you know, showed very little power speed last year, but did show the ability to hit like 270, 280. He's got two home runs so far, and one of them had a higher exit velocity than any of his homers last year. And what's interesting about it is Donovan has worked on increasing bat speed. He added muscle, and there's a pretty drastic swing change where now Donovan is much more upright at the plate. There's like side-by-side photos of him kind of with a crouch last year versus upright. So the fact that Donovan has blasted two home runs already, and, you know, that he does have that second base spot. Now Nolan Gorman might spell him out. It's still crowded, but he's one that the rest of the off season or the off season, the spring training, I'm going to be seeing if this continues, because there's enough to point to where I'm like, okay, this guy, you know, has kind of retooled. He's increased the bat speed. He's added muscle, And so far the results are pretty impressive. So Donovan, for being such a, like, you know, ho-hum utility man, like Skip Schumacher.
Cardinals devil magic.
Could be turning the corner, man. Yep. So definitely for like a best ball, I don't think it's the worst dart to throw for a middle infield. But yeah, that one is interesting. And then Jordan Walker is just, you know, his name's been thrown out for like who's this year's Julio Rodriguez if he can put it all together. And yeah, like you said, whether it's Carlson, O'Neill, I mean, they've got to do something there. I don't think it'll be Newt Barr, but yeah, Yepes is another one who could get traded, and maybe they just rotate a DH. But yeah, it's interesting on the offense side, at least for the Cardinals. But on the pitcher side, I think Steve, your boy Andrew Painter, my attention is highest on this pitching battle for the SP5 slot for the Phillies.
Hey guys, quick programming note. We did the podcast, did the edit, and then saw the unfortunate news that Andrew Painter is reported to have elbow tenderness. He's getting the MRI done, and we're not sure of the results yet, but did want to add that disclaimer before Steve and I gush about him for the next 5 minutes. So hope everything goes okay there, but did want to add that tidbit. Enjoy the show.
Bailey Falter and Andrew Painter, they've joked about how it's kind of the friendly competition, but Painter went yesterday and on Nick's Pitch Plus podcast, he talked about, I mean, he was gushing about Painter. He just said like, yes, I get it. It looks great. Eno Saris was talking about it, how his fastball was a 110 on the Pitching Plus model. And even that's kind of low for how hard he throws and how tall he is. So I think Painter could be kind of leaping into that Grayson Rodriguez draft territory, because right now, since February, Painter's ADP is 399 since February 1, whereas Grayson is 194. So a 200 pick difference there. It's going to be really fascinating to see if that almost comes right up into that range, if it looks like he's going to get that fifth starting spot. Falter pitched today, and it was kind of mediocre. He gave up a homer, recorded four outs. You know, the report said that he looked okay. But, man, I mean, where do you go? How high do you move Painter up, Steve, if you know that he's starting out of the gate for the Phillies?
It's just so strange. Like, the guy's 19 years old. There's all this talk about how they want him to help the team this year. Like, that's not how you – this is not how you handle a guy that you, like, want to save in double-A and triple-A as a pitcher. Like, I think it's a foregone conclusion that he's going to have a role and isn't being drafted as it like this. And I hope that he isn't yet, just so I can snag as many shares as possible. Like, I think this is –
all right, we're gonna have some
Get your rookie of the year bets in now before the odds are adjusted once it's announced that he's made the rotation.
Okay, I'm gonna start conservative here, but you know that he's SP5 for the Phillies. Hunter Brown is SP5 for the Astros with an ADP of 252. Would you take Painter in front of Hunter Brown?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Okay. Let's move up like 20 picks here. You got your kind of old guard class of Andrew Heaney, Sonny Gray, Jack Flaherty, Jose Barrios. Would you take Andrew Painter in front of those names?
Yes.
Okay. Next above them at ADP 220, Edward Cabrera, a guy that we like. Would you go Painter in front of Edward Cabrera?
There, maybe not, just because I think it's more of a defined role with a similar upside, potentially. So, yeah, that might be my line.
Wow. Well, that's a dangerous game to play because I'm coming up on pick 208 and 213.
It's just the issue is I think right now it's not smart to jump that high because it's just – who am I just speculating that he has a role? Like, it hasn't been announced that he has a role. Like, it's just annoying because he's either going to be drafted where he's going now at 300, or if they come out tomorrow and say he has a role, he's going to be drafted, pick 100, you know, 150, right? Like, you know, he'll be long gone. That's just what's annoying and kind of dumb about all of this.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get on the conveyor belt here. Some other pitcher battles to watch. Diamondbacks, Dre Jameson, some good swing and miss stuff, has the inside track for the last spot there. Brandon Pfaadt, last name you have to spell, Pfaadt, is also an exciting prospect, but I think the odds would be against him jumping over Dre Jameson there. Mike Soroka, Ian Anderson for the Braves is interesting. And then SP5 for the Yankees, Clark Schmidt versus Domingo Herman, is another one that I think whoever wins that is very much worth a dart late in drafts. I know you kind of like Clark Schmidt. Would you lean him over Herman?
I would, and I hope he does get that job. I think Clark Schmidt could be an interesting starter, especially in New York, just given team context and win context. He had some really good stretches as like a long reliever. I know he started a few games there last year too for the Yankees. Wasn't great, but I like Clark Schmidt's stuff and think he can be a very good starter if he wins that job. So I'm pulling for him.
Yeah. For the Cubs, Hayden Wesneski, another guy we've talked about throughout the offseason, had a 25% K rate last year, but even more room for that with his slider is pretty elite. And he's currently slated to have the inside track, but going up against Adrian Sampson, Keegan Thompson. So something to watch for the Cubs there. And then really interesting, especially because on Rates and Barrels, Eno Saris was raving about Tyler McGill for the Mets, who right now him and David Peterson unfortunately are more battling for the SP6. And the Mets have talked about giving, you know, Scherzer periodic breather. Why am I blanking on who else they were talking about giving rest to?
Verlander?
Oh, yeah, that'd be Justin Verlander because he's old, like 40. So, yeah. So they talked about kind of mixing them in. I think what's notable is if any of those guys goes down with an injury, like if Carrasco gets an injury or Quintana, I think McGill, you know, is another guy kind of like Painter, where if you heard he had a role, that ADP just skyrockets. Absolutely. Where, yeah, right now the ADP is around 500. I think he goes right up by some of those names like Andrew Heaney and Edward Cabrera. I think that's it's kind of that range. That's how much people are excited about McGill. Shame that he's kind of rotting as a backup. It would be really cool if the St. Louis Cardinals or some team, you know, got him to help out a bad staff. So that kind of wraps up some of the things that we wanted to watch for on like the rotation battles. Just kind of cruising through some other notable stuff on, you know, starting pitchers so far. Grayson Rodriguez, people are just saying how insane he looked. His fastball is averaging 98 miles per hour, 7.5 foot extension pretty much, which I saw a tweet that would have been fifth best extension in the majors last year. So, yeah, I think he's going to be really good. Maybe the one that was most interesting is Sean Manaea.
This is when I knew spring training was back. Yeah, this is when I knew baseball was back.
When Manaea was seen to be sitting 93 to 96 miles per hour as opposed to him averaging out at 91 last year, you know, apparently he was using the weighted ball with the Giants. Another guy that Mendy was talking about definitely had his eye on in the offseason for all the things that they've done with, like, Alex Wood. You know, there's some seam-shifted wake that they run out there and seem to have kind of a process formula for. So I think Manaea is the SP3 there, and with an ADP of super late, I think it's around, 327. So I think Manaea, I don't know about you, Steve, but definitely has my attention with pitchers around him like Taijuan Walker. Although I do like Zach Eflin going right after him, but I'm interested for sure.
Yeah, that big of a velocity jump you have to be, especially considering where he is that organizationally and what he did to work in the offseason. So definitely has my attention. Memeing any other, about spring training aside, yes.
On the downside, anybody who's in on Matt Manning, we've talked about him on the show with interest because of the prospect pedigree, but he's down 3 ticks. That's could be more what you were talking about, Steve, that people are just kind of working up.
Yeah. Injury concerns, though, for that one makes it the context a little bit tougher. Yeah.
Yeah. And then other names on the rundown, Steve, anybody you wanted to kind of talk about as kind of an SP notable or just more, you know, let's wait and see before we get too excited about any of these guys.
Yeah, I think it's more wait and see. I know you have here Robbie Ray velocity up. That's interesting, especially considering that it was down, I think, a bit at some points last year, and he made it work with like that sinker and everything. You know, Nick Martinez is a guy that's been interesting at times. I know he started off really well last year too, and then kind of faded. So who knows there? And I can't fall for this next trap again. I can't fall for anything that Kikuchi does, so I'll miss that train if he looks good.
It's like the Keston Hira, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, I've been down that well many a time. And the last thing that we kind of wanted to hit on is just an overall best practice is remember that the plate discipline is something that kind of carries through the most from spring training to you know, the actual season. So just threw some names out here, but I think there's a million guys you could pull. But, you know, a guy like Jared Kelnick, who's got 3 homers and he's surging up ADP lists, he still has a 27% K rate right now. I know the sample size is way too small, but just anybody who's hitting the cover off the ball, it's the second thing you do is you know, look at their stats, but then go straight to that strikeout rate if it's somebody who's got issues there. Some other ones that I kind of wanted to keep an eye on there was Cody Bellinger. You know, it's sample sizes are way too small, but just 1 strikeout in 7 plate appearances. The one that was kind of interesting is Eloheris, I can never say his name, Montero for the Rockies, because of the fact that Rogers is down. They played him a lot at the end of last season, and he has immense power. The problem is he had like a 34% K rate last year. But so far, he's got 16 plate appearances.
Which is like that's like the top end of the top. Yeah.
Yeah, so they definitely are trying to get a look at Montero here, and he has just a 12% strikeout rate right now. So if that were to be something that holds, you know, let's say under 20 or even under 25, I would start to be a little interested in that much power at Coors if he can kind of harness it in for Montero. So I like that one. And then, yeah, I don't know. Other ones are still super small sample size, but mentioned Tyler O'Neill, O'Neill Cruz, Cal Raleigh. These are guys who, you know, have top-end power, but really we kind of entered the offseason saying, can they get the Ks in check? So those are ones that I want to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah, and I think a good point is like overall to just kind of filter by at-bats at the end of spring training. Like who did these guys want to get looks at? It's an interesting thing to do. Like the fact that Montero has 16 at-bats already is more telling to me than even this 12% strikeout rate because that's 2 strikeouts in 16 appearances, which it isn't that much, but I don't think, you know, that's not sustainable just yet. But the fact that he has 16 plate appearances already, it's like, okay, these guys want to see what they have here, which I think is more telling.
Yeah, for sure.
But again, it's a Rocky, so maybe with other organizations, but
different knows? Organizations, yeah. Something to check out. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's the, you know, the Mariners, you know, that's just the fact that Kelnick, it's like, it feels like the time is now where it's like this season for Kelenic
or they might have to start
moving him out. Yeah. So, we'll be watching him closely, but that kind of rounds out the spring training, prep and, TGFBI as well. This is just overall the welcome to March show, Steve. It's a great time of the year, man. Yeah, we got to get another draft in.
It's the John Rothstein show. I know we've been saying that for the last few episodes, but with PLV and everything, we've been pretty busy. So, we'll get something on the board and have our home league drafts to talk about soon. So it's going to be good.
Exciting times, folks. Yeah. So, yeah, thanks for sticking with us, episode 89. We will now be on every week on the programming note. So we swapped to Saturday this week with travel for Steve, but next week we will be back on Thursdays. Yeah. I'm a little rusty as well in the spring training. Thursdays throughout the season and weekly shows as well. So thank you guys for tuning in. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at WinsBovePod. I'm at Van_verified. Steve is at Stav8818. Rounds us out for episode 89. Guys, thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks for listening, guys. Later.